This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Brandon Contes.
All righty, welcome to episode 48 of the Awful Announcing Podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Contes, and this week we have one of the most recognizable faces and voices of ESPN, Steve Levy, joining us. Steve, thanks so much for coming on the podcast today. And I should note that we're recording this Wednesday afternoon after the Rangers took a 2-0 series lead over the Hurricanes last night. How is it watching that game?
Don't forget the other overtime game, Brandon. The late game also went overtime last
yeah.
night.
So yeah, both went overtime.
That would explain my appearance this morning, okay?
how is it watching that game from the studio? Are you still capable of being a fan after more than three decades in sports media?
Yes, absolutely. And watching a Rangers overtime playoff game sitting next to Mark Messier adds to that. And Weeksy was with us last night. It was great. It's really a lot of fun. You know, it's what I've always said about the business. Like, it's great. But in the end, when you break it down, it's still watching sports with your buddies and getting paid pretty good for it. And like, so it's a pretty good gig. I'm one of those people who've said, you know, I've never really worked a day in my life kind of thing. I'm just so lucky. And last night was a great example. Like, it's a long day. It just is, right?
Yeah.
And I missed my kids' Little League game and all that stuff. But, you know, everybody's got to go work for a living. And so if this is my job, then I'm so lucky about it. It was great fun last night. Now we get to talk about it as fans and rip the officiating and do all the stuff the fans do, you know.
How did you become a Rangers fan growing up in Merrick?
It's a really good story. I was the only Ranger kid in my high school, in my town. And my 4 years really in high school, 9th through 12th grade, were the four Islander Cup years. And so as the only Ranger fan there, you can imagine. The Islanders seemingly went through the Rangers every single season. And I just remember in high school I had a Carol Vadney Rangers jersey. You know, I just get abused all the time. We probably lived, you know, 15 minutes from Nassau Coliseum.
Right.
I'm not sure my dad would have ever gotten season tickets, but I did go to a ton of games because all my buddies had season tickets. I went to so many big Islanders games and always rooting against the home team. And I couldn't wait for my mom to put me on the Long Island Railroad. My dad would meet me at Penn Station on the other end and go upstairs to Madison Square Garden. I was hooked. I was just a city kid living on Long Island. You know?
Last night, are you watching the same ESPN feed that all of us were? Like, I'm sure you saw last night's near Heidi Bowl moment. But did you see it live when ESPN?
So I did not know about it. I did not know really? About it. In fact, one of my college buddies texted me and he said, "What are you guys doing?" And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And I did not know. And I did not know until maybe we got into the second overtime.
Oh,
when
wow.
Someone from our control room said, "Hey, just so you guys know, there was a little snafu in the control room kind of thing." And it was 17 seconds and we escaped relatively unscathed.
Yes.
Nothing really happened. But no, I was not aware. We can't tell. Like, we're watching the feed. We must be getting a different feed, right? Yep. We're not getting commercials and stuff like that. So we really couldn't tell. And we've got two giant monitors. We have both games on at the same time. And so, no, we were not aware.
Yeah, so there was no, like, panic in the studio or anything like that.
Never heard any panic. I had no idea until probably an hour later.
Yeah. Despite that close call last night, I think fans are largely happy to have the NHL back on ESPN, this being the third season of that renewed partnership. How has the return been from your standpoint?
Listen, everything I see is good. You know, our PR department, you know, and I always wonder about ratings, right? It seems like everything is up. Every game is up. Everything's a new record every season. The leagues put out these ratings numbers too. So, you know, I'm a bit of a skeptic. I'm not sure really what to believe. It can't be everything in the universe is up. Attendance is up. Ratings are up. You know, all those things in every sport. It doesn't seem possible every single year. But when it's good, I certainly take it. I like to be part of it. And it seems like the National Hockey League is very happy with their partnership with us and also TNT. And I think it's going really well. I think the games have been great. You know, listen, we have a chance to have some, you know, epic all-time markets still remaining here. In the East, certainly, in both the NHL and the NBA. And then you'd see, you know, programming execs and sales execs and minds just exploding, right? And that should be good. I don't know if it'll trickle down at all. The working class. But it's got the chance to be an all-time postseason. And that's a lot of fun for everybody.
What was the feeling like in Bristol in 2004 when ESPN lost the NHL?
Like our dog had passed away. Our lifelong puppy had passed on us. It was, Brandon, I'm not exaggerating. There were tears in the hallways. I mean, people were so upset. And, you know, so people think about ESPN and, you know, it's me and Butchie and Barry and Linda, like the hockey people, right, you know, who go way back, yeah, right, back to that period. But there's so many more hockey people behind the scenes that, you know, nobody ever gets to see, right, because they're behind the scenes. But camera people, audio people, researchers, producers. I mean, the sport is so beloved and has always been a part of ESPN. You know, it's been kind of our lifeblood, right? Everybody was involved in the other sports, but we had hockey, right? We owned hockey, and it was our thing. And people are so protective of it. And again, back then, hockey was, you know, there's a big four, but it was a distant fourth, probably. And because of that, I think it was so beloved and protected by those who really cared about the sport. Didn't want it getting trampled on. And so people were devastated and really, really upset. And conversely, the total opposite feeling happened, you know, 4 years ago, whenever we found out we were going to get the rights again.
Yeah.
And people were ecstatic and jumping for joy, and people were having parties. And a lot of the same people are still there. You know, we have a researcher by the name of John Zoni. I mean, he's just, you know, unbelievable. He was back in the garage with me on ESPN2 raps. You know, we didn't even have a building in Bristol at this point where Melrose and I were doing these late night raps from. So I'm going on and on, but that was an emotional period, and getting it back was equally emotional in the good way. And, you know, guys like Zoni and Vince Massey and just crazy hockey fans who love the game, who work on it, were so happy to get the sport back.
Yeah. When it did come back, was it like riding a bike? Like how different did it feel calling an NHL game in 2021 compared to 2003?
The first thing people cared about the most was the music. Can we have the theme song back? Like that was the easiest thing. That was the easiest part of the transition. For me, I guess calling the game was the same way, and the intermissions the same thing. Like, you know, I'm not involved in the technology aspect, right? In the cameras or the analytics and all that stuff has changed, right? We have high definition in 2003.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but so many things have changed, ratios and things that are way out of my league. So it didn't really impact me, but how people consumed it obviously changed very much. You know, being able to stream highlights on your phone, all the social media, that it wasn't what it was back then.
Yeah.
So that obviously changed. But for me specifically, calling the game is calling the game, and the same deal with the intermission.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
For hockey fans my age, like Barry Melrose is it. Like he is the face of hockey just as much as Wayne Gretzky was and is. How was working with Barry?
I appreciate you bringing him up. And I've spoken with Gretz recently, and Gretz would say that very same thing, that Barry Melrose was the face of hockey in the U.S. on television while Gretz was on the ice. Barry was on television. And you know, we tried to make, I don't know what's going to happen with this Foster Hewitt Award. It's a broadcast. I'm going off on a tangent here. It's a broadcasting award for the Hall of Fame. It's traditionally been a very local award, local play-by-play, local analyst. It's never been open to a network personality, analyst or host for that matter. Ron McLean, Don Cherry, they're not in the Hall of Fame, for example, those kinds of things. People are usually shocked when they hear that. So we've sort of made a push to, for that committee to at least open their eyes to potentially network types.
Sure.
And hoping that Barry would get the nod because of what we just said, being the face of television for the last 30 years in the U.S. So I miss him desperately. Probably talk to him 2-3 times a week. We text a bunch. He's in full retirement. He's fighting that awful disease of Parkinson's, doing the best he can, good days and bad days. But everybody misses him the most. And because, you know, I mentioned the theme music. It's the theme music and Barry Melrose. I mean, that's hockey on ESPN and has been forever, will always be that way. So I think he's down there watching. He's watching the playoffs at his own pace. And I'll probably give him a call after this and I'll tell him you set your best too, Brandon.
How is working with Mark Messier now and PK Subban? You mentioned Weeks last night as well, yep. But particularly Messier as somebody that grew up a Rangers fan.
Yeah. So it's cool, right? Sometimes I get a little lost in it that, you know, he's my colleague slash buddy. Like, you know, we hang out. Like, Mess is really funny because, you know, during a regular season, I see something. I'll be watching, you know, it could be 12:30. I'm watching a West Coast game and I'll be like, hey, Mess, you see that play in the Sharks? And Mess will come bang right back. And yeah, I can't believe they were so at, you know, the coverage broke down so badly in the neutral zone. Like, whoa, you know, it's 12:40 at night. And then, all right, so I'll finish the text string, and then I'll text one of my buddies. Just so you know, Mark Messier just texted me about what's going on in the neutral zone in Vancouver. You know, like, so I sort of, there's still a line there. You know, part of me is still a fan.
Yeah.
But now, you know, we're hanging out, and we'll go out and, you know, have a beer after a game on the road, like the Winter Classic, and, you know, we'll spend some quality time at the Stanley Cup Final this year. And it's just, listen, it's interesting with Mess. I think he's come a long way in 3 years just on television, and he would tell you that. His words carry so much weight, right, on television. He's Mark Messier. And so I think he was very careful in choosing his words because of that, because his words carry so much weight. And I would try to say, Mess, you can't be wrong in anything you say. You're Mark Messier. Everything you say – you know, nobody can argue with anything you say based on your playing career. And so he's gotten a lot more opinionated. He's obviously had a lot more fun. You might have seen him chasing PK around with the Stanley Cup and all that stuff. So the TV side is really coming. And I try to help there when I can. But I think he's really enjoying it. And Mess wants to be the best at everything he's done. I mean, how do you get to be one of the best players of all time?
Yeah.
And so he wants to be coached. Wants to be coached hard, as many great former athletes turn analysts do. And so he embraces the whole thing. Nobody loves watching hockey more than he does. And, you know, we had a quadruple header, you know, 4 games and never a complaint, never a peep out of him. He pulls up a chair, gets close to the monitor, and he is locked in on the game. So it's been a blast. And then you realize, oh, by the way, who he is and what his career was. And he's a really cool guy, yeah.
When the NHL returned to ESPN, you were doing Monday Night Football. So there were weeks there that you did NHL studio work, you did Monday Night Football, and you called a weeknight hockey game. Was that fun or grueling?
Living the dream, brother. Brandon, I mean, living the dream. Yeah, we had...
It's quite the schedule.
There was 1 week there, and it just happened to work out time-wise. Monday Night Football was in Seattle for a Seahawks game, and the just two nights prior, on Saturday night, the Kraken were opening up their first ever home game, and I got to do both, and I'm like, wow, this is, you know, this is something to be really proud about. And, you know, in our business, a lot of people don't get to have the versatility, multi-sports, studio and play-by-play. Yeah. And so I've been really lucky to have, you know, the best mix of both worlds. But that's a week or a long weekend I'll never forget. That's an all-timer for me. And so, no, not grueling. The preparation is exhausting. And obviously the preparation for a hockey game as opposed to a Monday Night Football game is very, very different. That's a 3 day span. I'll never forget. That was something.
That
was
fun. Is that versatility? Is that something like, did you seek to be somebody like that in sports media, or did you have more of a, like earlier in your career, did you have one goal in mind of like, no, I want to be a play by play voice, or no, I want to be a sports center anchor. Like, did you want to do just one?
I'm not really sure where it turned. Like, studio has always been home, really. And that's really SportsCenter, right? Yeah. That's not even, you know, the NHL studio. It was really always SportsCenter for, you know, 20 of my 30 plus years. I always felt like I had the best seat in sports, you know, sitting next to legends like, you know, Stuart Scott. I even got to do, you know, do SportsCenter with Dan and Keith way back in the day. So to be able to be in the middle of it and be the first, the highlights, and be the first to show the country these great highlights. You know, when SportsCenter at 11 o'clock was appointment viewing and you had to see the show to know what's going on, and it wasn't so readily available on your phone. So studio's always been home and came first. And then I got to dabble a little bit. Here's a cool story. Like, so when I left New York City to come to ESPN, I remember putting at the time, it's really like the only clause I've ever had in any contract I had. My agent suggested we put two hockey games. That's it. Two NHL games in my first ESPN contract that they had to let me do two play-by-play hockey games. And I was like, well, that's an odd number. And I had never done a hockey play-by-play game anywhere. Like, I did radio in college, but never television anywhere. And so ESPN was like, well, it's got to be two because you could be terrible. Well, thanks for the confidence, coach. But I get it. They're right. It was the first time I was ever doing it, and I was doing it on national TV, which is insane. Yeah. And so, sure enough, I guess I wasn't terrible. Maybe I was okay. And I used to get a few more than that, and you know, got to rise up the ranks. And always, you know, I was always a second or third guy. That's always been a thing. I've never really done a championship at ESPN. I've been the second guy or the third guy. The first time of the XFL, I had a shot, and then
COVID
hit and sort of destroyed the world and all those kinds of things. So. But anyway, so I was able to branch out a little bit. I like the play-by-play. I like the mix. I always said, you know, these sports center anchors, we sit behind a desk wearing makeup, and it's easy to take cheap shots at these athletes, you know, who are on the field, you know, really doing the work. And so I would tell the younger anchors, hey, get out when you can. Like, go walk into that dressing room. Like, maybe you're not so clever and cute and funny in Bristol on the set when you have to see these players face-to-face. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
And you see them in the locker room, in the dressing room, in the clubhouse, and all of a sudden it's not so funny. And like, whoa, maybe I got to be careful and pull back my critiques of these players and criticism. And that really impacted how I did SportsCenter.
Yeah.
Because then back in those days, again, everybody was watching. Every general manager, every coach, every player. It was quite a responsibility.
How was being the voice of Monday Night Football?
The best, man. It was... That was the dream job, even though growing up on Long Island, massive hockey fan, Monday Night Football was always the dream job. And quite frankly, I thought it was unattainable because of the sheer numbers. There's one seat. There's one seat, right? You know, I got a chance to do college football. You know, we got 14 college football games every weekend at ESPN. So just by the sheer numbers, my chances were much better of getting a college football seat than Monday Night Football. And then it was just, you know, it was a wild chain reaction, right? Mike Tirico leaves. You'd never think Mike's going to leave ESPN. He goes. That got me into college football because Sean McDonough moved to Monday night. I took Sean's spot in college football. And all of a sudden, okay, now I'm here with Brian Greasy. And, you know, then things, it's an ever-changing business. People move in and out of slots, and then was so lucky to get it even for the 2 years. And then even after Joe and Troy came that third year, getting, I don't know, three or four Monday nights. But, you know, my two Monday nights seasons were during the pandemic. Like,
yeah,
Greece, Lewis, and I were in empty stadiums. You know, you hear the Monday night football team. So you get the dream job, right? The all-time dream. And then it's like, it falls a little short. I was hoping for 80,000 every Monday night. And I'm staring there, and there's just the three of us in the booth, you know, separated by glass partition. And so, but it's still great. I still get to put it on the back of my baseball card.
For sure.
And it's been a great.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
How did you like being part of a three-person booth?
It's different. It's interesting, because you're managing multiple personalities, multiple positions. And quite frankly, Lewis was in a really tough spot. Greece and I had done 5 years together. So we knew the cadence, how it was going to go. And Lewis was coming at it from a totally different perspective, meaning that defensive player, special teams player, front office personnel guy. And so I really wanted to add that in because those are all great things. Like, very few booths have all those possibilities from two analysts. Of course, Greece was, you know, super cerebral quarterback and all that kind of thing. So I thought we had a really nice mix. And I'm very proud of the work we did. And then, you know, Dan Orlovsky joining us as well when Brian went on. And so I'm very proud of those two or three seasons that we did Monday Night Football. And I'd like to get back there one day. That'd be nice.
Yeah, I think before you got there, Monday Night Football, the booth was receiving a lot of criticism for a couple of years. And then in your 2 years with Greasy and Riddick, there really wasn't much criticism at all. And I think that's a huge compliment to what you guys were able to do there. Did you know that gig might be temporary, that ESPN was going to eventually look to go big name hunting no matter how well you did?
Yes, I kind of got that sense. And look, I've been very public about this. Like, I always felt like one of my strengths is I know who I am, right? I know where I rank. It was the voice of Monday Night Football is a superstar job, right? And I just never considered myself that. I've just been one of the guys, you know, sort of the rank and file in a great superstar spot. So, listen, I had always hoped that would be long term, but, you know, Joe Buck comes along. Like, of course, you do have the opportunity to go out and get Joe and Troy. I totally get it. And that's why, quite frankly, I wasn't devastated when that happened. You know, like, again, it's I know where I rank and who I am, and I know what I do well, and I work really hard too. But and then even I'll watch it. You know, it sounds like they belong. It's supposed to be them. And we knew that, you know, the Super Bowl is looming. And no, I did not anticipate that. You know, I'd hoped sure. We'd gain some traction. You know what I mean? And maybe after 3 or 4 years, all of a sudden, you know, people get used to a certain sound. And even if you don't like someone, you know what? After a while, it sounds like, you know what? They're the guys on whatever network and whatever sport. So if you can get over that hump, whatever the hump is, you know, however many years that is. And I thought we had a chance to do that, the three of us. And then even later with Dan, too. But we just didn't have, you know, we didn't have the runway enough time, I think. But again, I'm really proud of the work I did that we did together in the most difficult time that, you know, I think any broadcaster would have to go through during the pandemic. I mean, everything was different. The meetings with the coaches, the meetings with the players, the meetings with our own staff, our own crew. We didn't have one meal with Lisa Salters. Could not sit down and break bread a single time in those 2 years. So some extenuating circumstances. Look, everybody's got excuses for why it didn't work out for them, and I'm not going to be that guy either. So I just I look back at that very, very fondly, and I love watching Joe and Troy on Monday night. I mean, and they're great dudes too. Like, what are you going to do? Like, they're great dudes. I think they're already in the Hall of Fame. Even, you know, like, I get it.
Did you talk to Joe about it when he came to ESPN? Like, was there any sort of passing of the torch or anything like that?
Joe called me right away. Let's see. I don't want to go into this. Joe called me right away. I was in the club lounge taking my daughter on her birthday trip, so it was not ideal timing. And what he said to me was something along the lines of, hey, buddy, 3 weeks ago, this was impossible, could never happen. Because remember, at that point, you know, Troy hadn't come over. And then Troy comes, and then it makes sense, and Joe. And he's like, hey, 3 weeks ago, this was never happening. This was impossible. And so, you know, crazy business, all those kinds of things. And listen, he didn't have to call at all. And we're friendly. We speak, you know, hi-bye. We want to see him on the road someplace. We text. He's a terrific guy. And he's you know, one of the best of all time at what he's doing. So, I appreciate everything about him and that group. And yeah, really no regrets on this end. And that's life. You know, I got a call from an equally famous broadcaster and who was checking on me, which I really appreciate. And I'm not going to say his name because I'm not sure he'd want me to. But he's like, hey, Steve, 99% of the people in our industry would kill for your career, meaning my career. This is after losing Monday night. He's like, yeah. Oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, right? I mean, the only other handful out there. So, again, I'm pretty blessed, pretty pleased.
What about being replaced by Chris Fowler as the number two announcer? And, like, you don't have to comment on this, but I'll be honest. Fowler does a fine job.
Yeah.
I think you're better, and I think a lot of fans agree with that. But is that a job that you wanted to keep?
Yeah, that's tougher to take. You know, I'll be honest, that was a tough one to take. And so, you know, there are lots of conversations that go on that I'm not privy to. And at the end of the day, I'm an employee and I've got bosses and I do what I'm told. I thought whatever the three or four games we were getting on that second package, you know, I thought that was a really nice landing spot after the 2 years I had under those circumstances. And it wasn't meant to be. And Chris is obviously a great broadcaster too. He's terrific. But listen, we got a lot of great broadcasters, you know, that are out there who haven't even gotten to the spots I've been in. And I'm sure they're saying the same thing. Well, look at Levy. I'm better than Levy. I can do this and all that. So that's our industry. It's a crazy industry. And again, I just go back to, I have to look back and say how fortunate I am to be in the spot. And I really got lucky by hockey coming back, right? I mean, you know, hockey was an all-time passion and love for me. And if not for the NHL coming back, I'm not sure I could do five nights of SportsCenter anymore in Bristol till 2 in the morning, you know, waiting for a Giants game to finish up the 14th inning. Like, that's – SportsCenter's a young man's game. And you're sort of seeing that, right? Like, you know, John Anderson's going to retire this summer. Like, you know, all the guys I grew up doing the show with, that's, you know, they're moving around. And, you know, Van Pelt's a genius, and he's got his spot, that slot, and that – you know, he's king there. And so the sports center that I know has sort of, you know, been bounced around a little bit. And so I'm not sure I could have gone back to that. And that's why, you know, hockey at ESPN, which is where we started this conversation, Brandon, has been so beautiful for me and my family and what it's afforded me to do and be able to see my kids' games and get out and still do games and studio. And so it's worked out nicely.
Yeah. And people could certainly look at your career, like you said, and say that they could do a better job at something. But I will just note that you did it and you proved that you could do a good job. So it is a little bit different from that standpoint.
Thanks, Brent.
Just moving on from that, how is working with Pat McAfee? I know you did the XFL with him briefly. I think you both did sideline reporting for college football megacasts before.
Yes.
How is working with McAfee?
I was just a guest on a show the other day too. And I think he's a genius. I think he gets it. And one example of that is, you know, he's all of a sudden, I was joking with him the other day, like, hey, it's like we're on the NHL network being on his show. Like he's taking the hockey, you know?
Yeah.
And he gets great guests. And so I think he recognizes that, you know, maybe he didn't grow up with it, but hockey's going to be a player in the sports landscape. And his guys, his crew, they seem to love hockey and they've got a great thing going on. But I can tell you his reach must be enormous. Every time I do his show, I can't believe how many messages I get on my phone from people that have seen it. And again, that's not exactly, you know, drive time, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I think he's 1 to 3 Eastern time. Shouldn't people be working and stuff? But it's amazing how many people are seeing his show. But he's got immense power, I think, now in the industry. And he's everywhere, right? He's really smart. He takes his show on the road, which is really important. Chance to touch the people, right, and be out and college game day and all that. And then, you know, he's just funny, right? And his way about him, he's obviously fearless. And I got to meet him on the field. So prior to doing Monday Night Football, I was doing the post-game show for SportsCenter, traveling around. And so we were at a Colts-Jets game, and he was still kicking for the Colts. And Matt Hasselbeck was on this post-game show too, and Matt would bring me around to the Colts sideline. And I mean, McAfee was just on fire on the sideline, in uniform, in helmet. And he just, you know, he was so funny, so entertaining. I'm like, oh my God, this guy, he's a natural. He's done stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
He can probably sing and dance too, you know. Probably good at chess. Like, you know, he's one of those guys. I think he's got it all going on. So he's an impressive character for sure.
Yeah, I think Pat definitely deserves credit for his willingness and his desire to talk about sports that might not otherwise be getting talked about too much on ESPN, and the NHL certainly falls into that category. Would you like to see more hockey talk on shows like First Take and Get Up?
Yes, and I think they've made some strides there, though, too, I'll say. PK Subban is everywhere. He is, like, omnipresent, you know? He's been on PTI too. I think Kevin Weeks is doing Pardon the Interruption today too. So Emily Kaplan's been on Around the Horn, you know. So I think the sport is really growing. And listen, obviously we take care of our own, right? So hockey comes back to ESPN. Hockey obviously becomes more of a priority. You see it coming out of the hockey game. Last night, Scott Van Pelt has Miles Wood immediately. Connor McDavid after they win the clinch series earlier. Like, so SVP has always loved Stanley Cup playoff hockey. But so all these shows, I think, are really buying into the National Hockey League, and the league just must be ecstatic with the deal. Like, I don't know what we paid for the rights. I don't get involved in that stuff, but whatever it is, the league must just be ecstatic just because of the, you know, the cross promotion, right? It's one thing to do the games, but ESPN gives you so much more, I think, in the commercials and the cross promotion elsewhere.
Does the NHL do a good job of marketing its stars? It just seems like it's so much easier for fans and casual sports fans to get to know NBA and NFL players than it is the NHL.
So Brandon, I think the NHL tries. I really do. I think they try, but you can't manufacture personalities. I mean, Connor McDavid is who he is. And so he's not going to be wild and flamboyant and have crazy opinions and just make it a yuck fest. That's just not who he is. Now, listen, in fairness, he's willing to do it. Like, he says yes every time. The guy knows he's the face of the NHL. Can you imagine their public relations staff? Like, every single game they play, everybody asks for Connor McDavid after the first period, after the second period, and after the game. You know what I mean? It must just be an impossible spot. So I think he says yes as often as he can, but he's just not going to give you the big smile. He's not going to give you the real insight. I think he's so locked in and focused. And you know what? If the Oilers win the Stanley Cup, maybe that'll change. Maybe that'll ease up on some of the pressure. You know, but Sidney Crosby, like, look at Sid. Like, again, does the interviews, giving the occasional smile. He's just these not flamboyant, outgoing personalities. That's not hockey. But when you get a guy who does have that, then you sort of glom onto them. And like Matthew Tkachuk, for example, Florida. He's a superstar on a high-profile team now that could play for the Stanley Cup this year. And, you know, we ask for him all the time. David Pastrnak of Boston. Brad Marchand. Like, these guys are willing to play and have some fun and are great players at the same time. So I think there's just fewer to choose from in the NHL. You know, Austin Matthews, not going to go out there. And he's the greatest American-born goal scorer, you know, in the league. Just not going to be – now, again, he might be that away from the camera. But on camera, he's not gonna give you the big opinion, the big smile, the big yuck. It's just – it's not going to happen. So it's just – it's fewer people, I think, to choose from. And then we got to try to get some younger players, hopefully, that'll come out and maybe break out of their shell a little bit. Like a Cale Makar, who people talk about in the same breath as Bobby Orr. But these guys are shy to themselves and team first and head down and do the right thing. And some of that is the hockey culture.
Do you think there can ever be another NHL player who transcends the sport the way Gretzky did?
Listen, I mean, Sidney Crosby is right there, I think. You know, a lot of people put Sid in certainly top 10 all time, maybe top 5 player all time now. I mean, he had an unbelievable season this year, and they didn't even make the playoffs.
Yeah.
He had one of his best seasons. Connor Bedard in Chicago certainly seems to have that kind of ceiling, you know, but check back in 15 years. I'm not sure about Macklin Celebrini, who is now the new toast of the town. He'll be the number one pick to San Jose in this upcoming draft. People I've spoken to say he doesn't have maybe the high-end offensive skill that Bedard has. Maybe better two-way player, won't put up the points, but might win more, which is, you know, interesting. So we'll have to see how it shakes out. But those, you know, those generational players, you know what they say about them, Brandon? They only come around once a generation. and we'll see how it goes with Bedard, right?
What years were you working at MSG? You were already at ESPN during the 94 Nixon Rangers run, correct?
Yeah. So I was at MSG. Don't quote me on this. You know, this is like a circa 89, 90, 91, 92 kind of thing. That was back MSG Sports Desk. If you've seen those promos during the hockey games, and you must have, for the Saving Sakic when the Rangers made the big offer to Joe Sakic. You see Bob Page pop up in a flash at the MSG Sports Desk. And he was a legendary anchor out of Detroit, came to New York, did a great job there. And I was one of his probably many backups at the time on MSG Sports Desk. It was, you know, it was cool to do in between periods there, halftime of the Knicks once in a while, did some MSG radio. You know, Marv would throw to me in between periods of a Rangers game. You know, that was on my answering machine forever. That was really cool. And so I've gotten to work with. I mean, you know, he didn't really know me at the time. He was just throwing it to me, but it was pretty cool. Yeah, MSG was great. CBS was great. Brandon, I was blessed, man. I grew up in the New York City metropolitan area, and I never had to leave town, right? Like, I was prepared to go. I tried to get the Binghamton Rangers AHL radio job that was paying $11,000 a year round, and had the room with the bus driver on the road. Okay, that's where my mom drew the line. And, oh, by the way, I didn't even get the job. I wasn't even good enough for that. I was like the eighth choice. And so I was really prepared to, you know, be riding the buses, whether it was minor league baseball or hockey, whatever it was. And I just got so lucky that, you know, knew some of the right people, had some connections, NBC Radio. I talked to Dave Sims the other day, the voice of the Seattle Mariners.
Former FAN midday host.
Right. And Dave, you know, Dave, bro, I was the Jets reporter for the Dave Sims show on NBC Radio. Mike Breen was the number two guy behind Dave. Like, it was, It's been a wild career, man. I've been some great places, seen some great
Who did you do updates for at FAN? Were you on working on Mike and the Mad Dog?
Yeah, I did. I wasn't the Mink Man. I wasn't John Minko. I get it. But I definitely did updates for Mike and the Dog. You know, Mike, who didn't love everybody, seemed to like me, seemed to take care of me for whatever reason, was really a big proponent of getting me started on television on Channel 2 in New York, CBS, on MSG, really helped me out a lot there. Dog's always been great to me, too. I think my claim to fame at FAN was we were the first team in the country, first radio station in the country to do that around the NFL and the whip around show. We had a stringer at every single NFL game. And that was the brainchild of Len Weiner, who was the producer at the time. And now every single station, networks, local, everybody has a stringer at every game and everybody does the show. But it was genius. Like, we could go there seconds after a touchdown. Let's go to Cleveland and here's this guy. And now off to Dallas for an update here. And so that was probably the height of my WFAN days. I also, I traveled with the Mets. I was the first Mets beat reporter. Susan was starting with the Yankees.
Yep.
We hadn't done it with the Mets. And I traveled with the Mets, and that was a season. That was the 92 season. Jeff Torborg, Eddie Murray, Bobby Bonilla.
Worst team money can buy.
That was some Mets team there. That was quite a summer there, yeah. But it was a great experience, man. Like, look at the things I've done, man. Going down memory lane with you has been cool, man. Thanks.
And who did you do your first Sports Center with?
First Sports Center was with Carl Ravage.
Oh, really?
Ravi beat me to ESPN maybe by 3 months. I think Linda got there 9 months before me. So I'm so nervous. Mike McQuaid's the producer, who is, by the way, still one of my many bosses. He runs all the hockey and stuff for ESPN, saw him last night. And we always started with a two-shot introduction, and then the lead anchor would look down and turn and to the teleprompter for the lead story. So Ravage introduces me. Here's our newest anchor. Welcome, Steve Levy from New York, blah, blah, blah. Thanks, Carl. And I never turn down. I never do the head down and to the teleprompter. And so now I'm like 40 seconds. I am so nervous. I am glued to the prompter. And just looking straight ahead on the two shot, which is awful for Ravage. So he's on camera. He's looking at me. And McQuaid's in my ear going, Steve, look down and turn, turn, turn. Like, you know, and I'm not turning. I'm not leaving that teleprompter. And that was my first night on SportsCenter. Yeah.
And I swear I intended to ask about this earlier in the interview. So it didn't seem like I was just sneaking it in at the end. But I am sneaking it in at the end anyway. The bulging disc moment, which I'm sure you're tired of talking about, but it is an iconic Sports Center moment. And it seemed like you were just going to power through. Like, you kept a straight face at first and quickly corrected yourself. Then the camera goes off of you.
Yeah.
And the laughter started. So credit you for the blunder.
Thank you.
But how much credit does Keith Olbermann deserve for making that into such an iconic clip?
Yeah, most of it. McQuaid produced that night too, by the way, just so you know. I'm starting to think it's him, yeah. And people wanted to blame the poor kid running the teleprompter. Like, no, I typed it in, and I typed it in correctly, by the way. I spelled disc correctly, okay? I just misspoke. It was probably some nerves then too. So that was when SportsCenter, we would come on right out of Monday Night Football on ABC. And so it was our biggest audience, right? That click over moment from ABC to ESPN, we'd welcome everyone. And then we would go through the list of injuries from Sunday. And that's, you know, the Maurice Hurst thing, and that became bulging. And then, but Keith does get credit because he's a genius, obviously. So I say bulging disc or the other thing. And Keith goes, Steve, do we have any video of that? Which brings the house down, right? I mean, the cameras are shaking and it's a 2 minute rip of you know, some potentially career-ending injuries that I'm crying laughing through, and Keith is not helping at this point. And the funny part that people don't know, I keep going back to Mike McQuaid, immediately coming out of this, we were going to a story about a figure skater who had passed away, okay? That was the next story in the rundown, okay? And in the broadcast business, when you want to not do a story, you say kill that story, right? So McQuaid gets him and he goes, we're going to kill the figure skating story. Now, she already died, right? So it's kill the death, the figure. I mean, so that set the show into chaos too at that moment. And I just remember, I'm only 3 years in at ESPN. Yeah. It was 96. And I really think, you know what? Well, it was fun while it lasted. I got Ann called out sick that night or had a family thing. That's the only reason I was sitting next to Keith. It was my big shot. And I remember walking out and guys back in those days were carrying stacks of tapes, right, under their arms. I mean, 20 tapes each side just to give to their friends, like to show people, you know. And the last thing about it is I got back to the desk and it was a voicemail. I had a lot of voicemails and from people I didn't even know, broadcasters in the business. Fred Hickman was at CNN, I think, at the time. And he sent me a nice note. And Norby Williamson, who only until recently was my boss forever.
Yeah.
He said, Steve, that was some of the funniest television I've ever seen. Keep up the great work. So I was relieved. And to this day, Brandon, to this day, I still get stopped and say, you're the bulging disc guy. And I'm like, yep, that's me. So, you know, you got to be known for something. I think it's worked in my favor. When I do these, you know, I do these charitable events, whatever, any kind of speaking engagement, I try to open with that because traditionally I'm not that funny. So that's kind of a funny moment. I've always been the straight guy on SportsCenter, you know, sitting next to the funny anchor. I'm a good audience. I laugh. But this one, I guess, is my own. And now whenever a younger person does it, and people make the same mistake now once a year, it seems like, a younger broadcaster.
Yeah.
It always brings it back up and recirculates because I guess I was the first.
Was there extra pressure filling in for Dan or Keith on the big show? Or
absolutely.
It wasn't just another sports center.
No. That was a big deal. Guys were climbing over each other. If one of those guys took a night off or was out for whatever reason. You know, those days, that was obviously before L.A. We didn't have an L.A. show. And we were on at like 2 in the morning, live in Bristol. And sometimes that show was a half hour. And we met, and then it was the fixes because it ran till noon or 1 o'clock the next day. So to get out of the 2 a.m. to go to 11 o'clock with Dan or Keith, that was a pretty big feather in the cap. Yep.
Steve, you were great. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on, Brandon. A pleasure.
Of course. That is Steve Levy. I'm Brandon Contis. This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. Please rate and subscribe to this podcast. Please also subscribe to Awful Announcing's YouTube page. But regardless of how you consume Awful Announcing and the Awful Announcing Podcast, thanks for listening and be good.
Thanks for listening to the Awful Announcing Podcast. For the latest news spanning the sports media landscape and more, check out awfulannouncing.com and follow us at awfulannouncing.com.